And now to a galaxy far, far away with Australian speculative fiction writer Sean Williams. Sean Williams has written 27 novels and some 70 short stories in a range of genres, including fantasy, gothic and science fiction, and he's won a swag of awards. In 2001, Sean Williams and co-author Shane Dix sold American publisher Del Rey three Star Wars novels. Then in 2005, George Lucas's company, LucasArts, began creating a multimedia project called Star Wars The Force Unleashed, which has as its centerpiece a video game set in the period between the two Star Wars movies trilogies. Sean Williams was commissioned to write a novel to accompany the game. His book of Star Wars The Force Unleashed is the first novel written from a game to reach number one on the New York Times bestseller list. It was published recently in Australia. Sean Williams comes from a South Australian quiet Adelaide suburb, and that's where Fiona Kroll talked to him for the book show about the experience of writing for the Star Wars franchise and about the plot of this new book.
The Force Unleashed is an important book in the Star Wars, the ever-expanding Star Wars story arc, because it's set immediately before Episode 4, the very first Star Wars movie that came out, A New Hope. So the Jedi that once kept peace in the galaxy had been almost completely squashed. Darth Vader and the Emperor rule the galaxy with an iron fist, and Darth Vader has taken an apprentice with which to mop up the last of the Jedi. And by attempting to do that, the Jedi accidentally brings into being the rebellion that, with Luke Skywalker and Leia in subsequent movies, will overturn the Emperor and destroy Darth Vader, or redeem Darth Vader, I should say.
You are a prolific writer, Sean. You've written many other books, novels, space operas. You've got Earth Ascendant out, which is set millions of years away, about a man who's sometimes a woman whose self has turned against him. And this story, you know, it has similar sort of themes to Force Unleashed. You know, it's got complicated pasts, that slippery relationship between good and evil, you know, many different components. What were the themes that you had to include in this Star Wars?
The good and difficult thing about writing in the Star Wars universe is that you are required to write a story that is similar to the Star Wars movies. And the Star Wars movies tend to touch on similar themes many times over, just like many movies touch on these themes. They're themes of redemption, themes of loss, themes of hope when times are darkest. And some of those themes are particularly, the colour has turned up particularly high in The Force Unleashed, because it starts off in a very, very dark place and ends up with one tiny little ray of hope at the end. And there's always a bit of romance thrown in as well. I mean, these are adventure novels, they're supposed to be fun, but they're supposed to be very powerful and slightly mythic as well, which makes them very good fun to write. You know, I was 10 when the first Star Wars movie came out, so I responded very strongly to those themes as a 10-year-old reader and as a 10-year-old boy, a 10-year-old person, and I still respond to those as an adult.
You mentioned the dark side there and the apprentice, who you talked about Darth Vader giving him, you know, the mission to go and do all sorts of aggressive things in the galaxy. You know, he says, in conflict, it was easier to become one with the dark side. Violence was the ultimate meditation. How does the apprentice get empowered as a character with the dark side?
Well, this story is actually, the backstory to this story is actually quite a sad story. And this is something that I wanted to explore as deeply as I could, bearing in mind that children as young as 9 or 10 would be reading it. So the apprentice was a boy whose father was a Jedi Knight, a good guy. The boy, at the age of about 5 or 6, displayed a very strong natural ability in the Force. Darth Vader recognized that, killed the father, took the boy, raised him in a life of isolation and basically abuse for the next 12, 13 or so years, and then unleashed him as a weapon upon the world. So this poor boy, whose only father figure now is Darth Vader, the galaxy's great monster, his best friend is a robot who is programmed to train him by trying to kill him, and he has no memories of his former life at all, his family. So by the time we meet him at the beginning of the book, he understands and all he feels comfortable with. But by interacting with other people, once, of course, he's unleashed from his apprenticeship and set upon the galaxy, he meets people, new people, who deal with life in very different ways. One of them, his pilot, Juno Eclipse, the romantic object of the novel. And he starts to see alternate ways of seeing the world and experiencing the world and experiencing himself, which made him a complicated character to write because he's not emotionally labile and he's not really encouraged to communicate at all, or certainly hasn't been by Darth Vader. It made him a very difficult point of view character to deal with, but a very enjoyable one for that. I like a good challenge.
It is based on a computer game, and that game appears to me to be quite a violent and testosterone-driven kind of blokey game, but your novel has a bit more of a softer, I guess more romantic side with Juno Eclipse. Tell me about the whole character of Juno and perhaps how you try to touch on that more sort of feminine side of a Star Wars theme.
Well, that was one of the concerns I had when I was given the script. It was a very, very good script, but it was definitely a script for a computer game that could have been designed for 14-year-old boys experiencing rage at their father and a general kind of rage that they can't let out. Computer games are marketed towards young men and appreciated most by young men, but Star Wars novels are read at least 50% by women. So in attempting to turn that script for a computer game designed for men into a book that had to appeal to women as well, I had to really consider very carefully how the story would be told. I already said that the apprentice didn't like to talk, wasn't emotionally labile. The new master that he picks up along the way, he was a former Jedi, now a drunk, blinded, full of self-loathing despair. Again, not very emotionally labile, nor very talkative. Again, not a good angle to see the main character from. Luckily, there was this woman who, although a servant of the Empire and nominally a bad guy, was at least self-aware and increasingly aware of the apprentice and was the obvious choice for the second viewpoint character. So focusing very closely on her character and her backstory gave me lots of ways to open up what could have been a step-by-step retelling of the computer game, but hopefully is a more rounded novel now.
We're sitting in your writing room at the moment.
Yes, here we are.
Very neat, very small, you'd say. Perhaps you could just describe it and tell us a bit about the writing routine that you have, especially when you were writing Star Wars The Force Unleashed.
Well, my study is a small room, partly because this was the room I was allocated when we moved in last year. The boys got first choice and I got second choice. But I quite like the small spaces. If I had a big study, it'd feel quite weird, a bit echoey and strange. I tend to like my studies dark and a bit crowded, so this suits me well. I've got a giant wall of books on which are sitting a couple of Daleks and a little coffin that a bottle of wine came in that a friend of mine gave me. I've got stacks of books everywhere. I work at my grandfather's desk next to an old miner's lounge from his family. I have the original art from my very first novel framed on a wall, and above my desk a painting of a Stone Age ceremony, the painting's called, by Art Vanderbilt, and it's a picture of a bunch of Aboriginal men underneath something that might be the sky or the moon, a beautiful wash of browns and greys that captures, reminds me of the wonderful nature of the land we live in. So that's the kind of environment I work in. Of course, there's various iPods and computers and all that sort of stuff, but this is the space that I like. I tend to get up first thing in the morning and check my email, and then when I'm working on a novel, write in the morning. So I try to write 1,500 words every day, and that's actually usually a maximum limit. If I'm writing a novel, my instinct is to write as much as I possibly can and burn myself out really quickly. So if I make myself write 1,500 words and then I kind of have to stop for a bit, then that slows me down and helps the storytelling process. Of course, it's not always easy to write 1,500 words. Sometimes it's very, very hard. Sometimes I do write more. And sometimes where deadlines demand, I will write faster. And The Force Unleashed was a case in point where I had a strict deadline on which the book had to be due, but I couldn't start writing until the script of the game came in. And the script was running late and getting later and later and later. So the book was due March 1st, 2007. I received the script and started writing on February 1st, 2007. So I had 4 weeks, because February's a short month, to write a 100,000-word novel. And as I've done in the past, I took the word count, divided by the number of days. It came to about 4,500 words a day, and I started writing. And I was allowed to do nothing else but that for a month. Because the deadline was so tight, and because I was being paid very well to do this job, I was able to say to everybody around me, no more meetings, no dinners, no nothing. I was getting married 3 months later. I was able to say, that has to go on hold for a little bit while I get this job done. So I got to live completely in the moment of this story. It's what I lived and breathed. I ate and drank it. I sweated it. I cried over it. I did nothing but write this story. And it was an incredible rush. I mean, of course, I was terrified when I submitted the book and then was told 2 days after I submitted it the game was now being delayed, so I could have had another 6 months. But so I delivered the book on time, which I was very proud of. 4,500 words is a lot to write in a day, and it's exhausting, but it can be a lot of fun too. When you're writing action scenes, when you're doing some of the stuff that I was doing in this book, it's a lot of fun. It was a real rush, and that came through in the writing. Thank goodness. If I'd had to write the thing from scratch, I would have had to tear my hair out. This is a reading from The Force Unleashed. It takes place in the middle of the story when the apprentice is off on a mission to dispatch yet another Jedi Knight, and he's travelling across an alien planet encountering strange things, as you do on an alien planet. And it features a line from Babe, which is one of the reasons why I chose this scene. At the river's edge, he used the Force to attract one of the many flat-backed river beasts he'd seen the Felucians ride. Its mind was semi-sentient at best, but its mighty flukes could manage a fair turn of speed. Gripping its carapace with one hand, he rode its undulating body toward the town, occasionally pausing to fling lightning at Felucian guards who bothered him. "That'll do," he told his half-submerged steed as they approached the town's borders. The beast nuzzled into the bank and he leapt aground near a massive conical standing stone that loomed half a head taller than him among the gelatinous trees. He put a hand against it for balance and was surprised by two things, that it was warm and that it wasn't made of stone at all. Puzzled, he swung his lightsaber in a sweeping arc, cutting the odd monument in two. The top fell away with a crash, revealing an interior made of fibers and organic material. Bone, he thought. A tooth. The ground beneath him shook and he braced himself against the monument. From the town he heard the sound of Felucians crying out in alarm. A curious thought began to take shape in his mind. A curious thought. That's a Gothic phrase. It's not just a straight by-numbers book. There are little hints of my Gothic fascinations creeping through as well.
Let's talk a bit more generally about sci-fi and its resonance and themes in our world. I mean, J.G. Ballard once said, "Everything is becoming science fiction. From the margins of an almost invisible literature has sprung the intact reality of the 20th century." Do you believe in that, or is it a bit more abstract than that? Are there parallels to our world?
Well, science fiction, like any fiction, holds a mirror up to the real world, always. Science fiction is always about now, always about contemporary issues. But in the process of writing science fiction, 9 times out of 10, I suspect, we do try to imagine what is in the future. So some things we science fiction writers write about do come true. Some themes we touch on will be more relevant, perhaps, in the future than they are now. Or some of these themes are beginning to become apparent now but may not be widely known or widely appreciated or widely reported.
I remember years ago I spoke to Brian Aldiss, who calls it SF. And he said to me that, you know, ever since Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, SF has been dishing out a variety of gloom and diets of catastrophe. But many great SF writers are still ignored. You know, it still polarises the audiences. Love-hate camps are there. So many good writers, he thinks, are ignored. Why do you think that is?
That's a really, really good question and one that confounds me quite regularly. I don't think there's a simple answer to it. I think Hollywood's partly to blame. I even think Star Wars is partly to blame. Star Wars was a huge blockbuster success, but it did cast the die for science fiction movies for a long time. I mean, Star Wars is a well-told story, but it's not groundbreaking cinema. It's not a groundbreaking story. And those were the kind of stories, and are still the kind of stories, that science fiction in cinema tends to convey. There are wonderful movies doing interesting science fiction, exploring interesting science fictional ideas, but they're not marketed as science fiction. The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is, to my mind, possibly the best science fiction movie for 20 years. But people are constantly surprised when I say that, because it doesn't have spaceships, it doesn't have aliens, it doesn't have ray guns. So to a lot of people, spaceships, aliens, ray guns, for instance, Margaret Atwood, that is how she categorised science fiction, except it was giant squids in space for her, for a long time. And that's really unfortunate, because I think there are serious things, serious analyses of ourselves and our culture that can only be conducted via speculative means, the means of speculative fiction. The whole sci-fi versus SF versus speculative fiction versus spec fic thing is just a matter of nomenclature. I don't really quite mind what people call it, as long as people are willing to keep their minds open about what it can do. Mary Shelley's book Frankenstein was a wonderful piece of literature and still is, even though it's a bit harder to read than the movies are to watch. And there are equally groundbreaking books being written right now by authors in Australia and overseas that are ignored to the detriment of literature as a whole.
Well, this is your fourth book in the Star Wars franchise. What is it like writing for a franchise? What are the challenges that you came across? What's it like, you know, having the big wigs in LA perhaps monitoring your storyline so that you don't go off course?
Well, you deal with it by doing the very best job you possibly can. These are collaborative.
No, come on, we want the dirt. We want the dirt.
Well, I have lots of Star Wars horror stories. I think, well, not lots. I have a couple. Anybody who works in this kind of field where it's very collaborative and often the timelines are very intense have these kind of experiences where things fall over a bit and everybody works very, very hard to pick up the pieces. And on the whole, my experience has been very positive. And for the right project like this book, I'll happily do it again.
You did mention that you were 10 when the first Star Wars film came out in 1977. And, of course, there's been many storylines since then, more novels, more films. What is it, from a writer's point of view, that still gives you that sense of wonder to keep going, to keep writing more to do with Star Wars?
Sense of wonder is a really good phrase, and a lot of people say that that is the key to science fiction and fantasy, to a certain extent. And that sense of wonder, that sense of the new, the sense of something that you haven't seen or thought of before that makes you go, wow, makes your the hairs on your arms stand up on end, makes you, your brain kind of orgasm with something new and fizzy and exciting. It's hard to find. And some people don't like that kind of thing. Some people say that a sense of wonder is like a sense of humour, you know. Some people have it, some people don't. Some people have it in different ways to the way other people do. So I wonder if that's why some people don't like science fiction. They get their sense of wonder fixed from somewhere else. Anyway, and the 10-year-old boy in me is really pleased too. You know, this is a story that, when I came out of that first Star Wars movie, the two questions I asked were, what next? What's happening next in the Star Wars universe? And the other question was, what happened immediately before? And I got to tell that story. And the 10-year-old in me is jumping up and down with excitement, even now.
And we are too. Sean Williams speaking with Fiona Kroll for The Book Show. And Star Wars, The Force Unleashed is published by Titan Books. On ABC Radio National, this is The Book Show. I'm Ramona Koval.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.